Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another hour of Tribal Wisdom. I am your host, Cynthia Williamson from Vital Tribe. And if you are joining us this month, you know that we are dealing with health literacy for the month of October, where we're talking about all things health. Now, normally our show is about all things weddings, marriage, and family. And since we believe that health is a big part of family and marriage, as well as weddings, even though most people don't always see it that way, we are talking about weight loss. Not just weight loss. Today, we have a special guest all the way from Australia, Ms. Kylie Ryan. And we're going to talk about how our mind affects our choices and our health as well. We are so glad to have her on as a special guest tonight. And we went through so much just to do it, but we are here anyway. And we look forward to having everyone listening in on it. Kylie, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hooray! We made it.
Yes, we did. It's so cool.
You mean
so
tech
cool.
Issues sorted out.
Yes, yes. So first, why don't you tell everybody where you are from and what you do, because they're going to hear that beautiful accent and wonder anyway.
Yeah. Yes, my Australian accent, that's right. Mm-hmm. So where I am. I am sitting right now in my office in Sydney, Australia. And I am a weight loss motivation coach. I am a mindset specialist, hypnotherapist, and meta coach. And I help women, especially with losing weight. But losing weight is the side effect of the work that I do. I help women with empowerment, with clearing their self-limiting beliefs, with overcoming emotional eating, with getting back their personal power, getting back that sense of taking on the world, of being able to go and do whatever they want to do, and having the skills and the tools to navigate all of the relationships in their life with ease and with grace and with compassion. And that's such a huge part of the work that I do, is teaching women about how to be in a better relationship with themselves and with others.
I love it. Especially the part where you said clearing self-limiting beliefs. That's going to be a big one. I can't wait to get into that. But one of the things that you sent to me was how our mind affects our choices and our health. Let's go straight for that one, because that's a meaty one right there.
Yeah, absolutely. How our mind affects our emotions and our health. It's absolutely so critical, because our mind affects all of our choices, and you don't realize that, you know, we kind of go along our lives in almost on autopilot. We don't necessarily think about the choices that we're making until afterwards, and, you know, maybe we make a bad choice, or maybe a choice that we later regret, and then we go, oh God, why did I do that? And so, you know, that might be overspending, or it might be overeating, or, you know, drinking that extra glass of wine, or, you know, whatever it might be. It's often not until after the fact that we go, oh, why did I do that? And there's a whole interplay of thoughts and emotions and influences and patterns that have led to that one decision. That often we can't make a change to unless we start to unravel the causative factors that have led up to that decision. And it's basically everything that's happened in your life up to that point has led you to make that particular decision in that moment. And so if you're going through life without being consciously aware of the choices that you're making, then you can get yourself into some pretty tricky spots, as I certainly did in my own situation. I went from, you know, really struggling in pretty much all areas of my life just 10 years ago to being pretty thriving, pretty, you know, I'm kind of killing it in nearly all the areas of my life.
So I love it.
It's pretty good. So I went really struggling to really thriving. And the change started with working through my mindset and understanding how my mind works.
Well, you know
Yeah.
Now that you say that, why don't we talk about the different types of mindsets? Are there different types of mindsets that we deal with when we're moving from a limited person to an unlimited type of thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many different. Well, your mindset is really a combination of your beliefs and your state. So it's your state and your mindset and your physiology, and your state, your beliefs, and your physiology interact to in kind of like a loop to create your mindset in any one moment. And so your beliefs are the ideas that have that you've picked up along the way through your life. And so, you know, you'll know yourself, there have been times when you've done certain things and you've gone, wow, that was really great, or that really worked, or gee, I'm never going to do that again, or maybe I'm never going to date a guy like that again.
Wow.
It's, you know, different decisions that you make, mm-hmm. and then they become your beliefs. They become a part of that fabric of the hundreds and hundreds of beliefs that make up your personality. Mm-hmm. And then we have things called metaprograms, which are personality tendencies. So I'm guessing that this might be what you mean. So these personality tendencies are the things that people might recognize as, you know, being called an optimist or a pessimist, or you know, being a big picture thinker or a detail thinker. These mm-hmm. are kind of like the operating systems that our minds run on. They're the tendencies that make up who we are. So, you know, a detail thinker will be very different in the way that they would approach a problem, or the way that they would approach dealing with a wedding or planning a wedding, than a big picture thinker would. And so these different personality tendencies are a big part of what make up your mindset. And then there's also your state management. So how you're feeling on that day, whether you're having, you know, whether you're happy that day, or whether you're having a bad day, that can color how you perceive the world. And so that filters what kinds of beliefs that you bring up and what kind of choices you make on that day. And then that also interacts with your physiology. So whether you're sick, or whether you've got loads of energy, all of that interrelates to form your mindset. And so there's so many different strands that create your mindset, that create your choices on that particular day or that particular moment, and it can change from moment to moment. So you know yourself, if you have a bad day, that can set you off on a spiral of poor choices and
regrets.
Yeah,
because I will go straight for the chocolate.
Yeah. That's right. You're like, I'm having a bad day. Let's get me that chocolate.
Yes, let's get some sweets on the table.
Yeah, let's get some sweets on the table. But the thing is that you know what happens after you've had that chocolate hit.
Mm-mm. Well, me personally, I try not to have too many regrets. So if I ate the chocolate, I ate
great.
The chocolate. Right. I'm just like, look, I ate the chocolate. Now let's just start.
So what?
Tomorrow. Right. So what? I ate it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, you know, make myself go for enjoying
it.
And now let's see what I need to be doing tomorrow. Let me make sure that I eat better tomorrow.
Perfect. And that's, you know, Cynthia, that's a great, great way to approach it. And so few people have that mindset about it. And, you know, I talked to lots and lots of women about that. And so many times, you know, whether it be the chocolate or the glass of wine or the chips with dinner, or, you know, sitting on the couch at night and, you know, just hoeing into some ice cream or whatever it is, you know, whatever whatever your vice of choice is.
Right.
And that then can create, that feeling of, you know, guilt or regret or starting that negative spiral of self-talk where you're like, oh my God, I did it again, or I shouldn't eat the chocolate, or blah, blah, blah. That kind of starts that tirade of nastiness that that can really be detrimental. And so, yeah, that's no good when you get into that. So if you can come from that place of acceptance, just like you said, that really makes a huge, huge difference. That's a huge takeaway point.
Well, you know what?
Go on. It actually makes you eat less as well, is when you come from that place of acceptance. Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
That's good to know, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, now that you're saying all of that, I guess that should take us right into kind of self-sabotaging. Is that part of self-sabotaging when you start really kind of berating yourself and feeling bad about the choice that you made?
Yeah, totally, totally. The self-sabotage is a part of that, is a part of those underlying kind of issues that I've talked about. So self-sabotage kind of works on two levels. There's the kind of day-to-day action self-sabotage, and that's the things that you notice. So that's the, you know, when you say to yourself, okay, I'm going on a diet, I've got my wedding coming up, I'm gonna eat well, and I'm gonna train every day, and it's gonna be great, and I'm gonna be perfect. And then you find yourself, you know, at the bottom of the ice cream tin or jar or whatever it is, and you're like, oh my God, I've done it again. So that's the self-sabotage in practice. That's the actions that you'll notice. The thing with self-sabotage is that it can be so many different things. The self-sabotage is, you know, you think, God, this is the most terrible thing, self-sabotage. It's, you know, why would I do that? I'm going for this goal. I've got this thing that I consciously want, and I, you know, I really want to go for, but I'm doing these things that don't match up with that goal, that aren't aligned with it, things that are taking me away from it. So why would anyone do that? It doesn't make any sense, huh? And that's where that's kind of that beratement and you know, the nasty self-talk can begin, because you think, oh, why would I do that? Why am I so stupid? Blah, blah, blah. All of these terrible things that you say to yourself. And that again is a symptom of the self-sabotage. But self-sabotage actually comes from a place of love and protection, which not many people know. It actually comes from a place of love. And so the deeper part of self-sabotage is actually, it's in your unconscious mind, and that's what's known in kind of psychology is called secondary gain. And so secondary gain is where your mind kind of pushes you away from a goal that you want, that you consciously want, because it has some kind of negative association with it. So to put it in context, so it's a goal that you're like, this is the best thing ever, I can't wait to get this new job or this new promotion or lose weight or get married or, you know, whatever that positive goal is that you're thinking about. But then once you start to get close to it, then you might start to self-sabotage. And the self-sabotage might be eating the ice cream, or it might be overspending, or it might be self-sabotage can sometimes even be getting injured. You might get sick or get injured just as you start to get close to your goal. And that's an indication of self-sabotage as well.
Let me just stop you right there, you know, because...
Yeah, yeah.
You said something about it coming from a place of love, and I want you to explain that to me again. You said it comes from a place of love, and what else? Because it has a negative, it feels negative toward that goal.
A negative. That's right. That's right. So there's a part of you that it's not all of you, because consciously you want it, right? Consciously you're like, I've got to go get this thing. It's amazing. I really want it. But there might be some unconscious fear or a negative association associated with that goal. So if we go back to this person losing weight, for example, which is my expertise. So say for a woman losing weight, if if they've been, a bit heavier and feeling a bit overweight, and they're like, I really want to get slim and healthy and skinny and look gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So that seems like a really positive goal. But what if this girl also has seen news footage of some skinny, attractive girl getting attacked at some point in her life? She's seen some news footage of some slim, attractive girl getting attacked. Mm-hmm. Maybe she has this belief maybe she was struggling with her weight in school and there was this group of skinny girls and they were mean to her. And so she has this belief that skinny girls are bitches. And so skinny girls are bitches and they're mean and they're nasty. Mm-hmm. And maybe she has, she has this kind of fear. She's in a great relationship with her partner. They're really comfortable. They do all the, they do things all together. And she's kind of thinking in her unconscious mind, this isn't a conscious thought, but an unconscious fear. But maybe if she gets really, slim and attractive, maybe she might, it might affect her relationship with her partner. Mm-hmm. Maybe she might get attracted to some other guys. Mm-hmm. Or maybe some other guys might hit on her and it might negatively affect her relationship with her partner.
That's really, really something. I'm thinking about like even the family that I come from. I come from women who are on the voluptuous and thick side.
Yeah, on the curvy side.
Yeah, they're very curvy. And when I was growing up, they didn't call me by my name. They called me 6 o'clock because I was straight up and down. They said I had no shape at all. So they used to call me 6 o'clock. They used to call me 6 o'clock. They were mean. They were mean.
That is really mean.
Right, because it was almost as if, it was like, well, we don't know where we got you from because all of us are like thick and voluptuous and we're busty and we've got hips and where, where is everything? Where do you come from? So, I grew up very, very slim, very thin. And then when I got into my 20s and 30s, I thickened up and I liked it because I felt like I was a part of my family,
That's so, right.
Right. So now when if we go to visit the health practitioner or the doctor and they say, you really need to take off about 50 pounds. And I'm like, you've got to be out of your mind. You know how long it took me to get here?
Yeah, you got to be kidding me. I finally came with my family. You want me to become back to 6 o'clock again?
Exactly. They're gonna talk about me again like I'm not a part of the family. So, So I do after your explanation, I can understand what you mean by you do have a goal. You want to reach that goal, but you also have a negative experience behind it. And you almost self sabotage yourself in not getting there. Excellent.
That's right.
All right.
Go ahead.
No, it's all right. I was saying, okay, go all for right. it.
All right. So the thing is, we want to move away from, away from pleasure, away from pain and towards pleasure. Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing, though, that's pretty basic motivation. We want to get away from pain towards pleasure. We want to get the most pleasure for the least amount of pain. That's kind of the very basic kind of human drive. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, though, is, nature is a beautiful mechanism of infinite balance. And, we have no idea about all of the amazing, science is just starting to uncover some of the mysteries of the glorious symphony of nature. Mm-hmm. And so we are a part of that glorious symphony as well. And so we have these kind of checks and balances. We have this kind of equilibrium balancing mechanism within us so that every pleasure also has an equal and opposite pain attached to it. And so when you're in this kind of self-sabotaging mode, we end up unconsciously hitting this kind of comfort zone where we're not at the very extreme of that goal that we might want, but also has a negative association. Mm-hmm. But we're also not at the very far extreme of the worst situation that we've been in, which also has the pleasurable association or, the instant pleasure of feeling, maybe safe or secure or you know, not having to try so hard. So we end up finding this kind of middle ground, and that's what happens to a lot of women when they're yo-yoing. They kind of yo-yo diet between these two extremes,
mm-hmm.
and eventually they'll find that there's this kind of point that they settle on, and that point is the middle ground between those extremes of the pain of being really overweight, for instance, or really in debt,
mm-hmm.
and the extreme pleasure of achieving that goal of achieving that, you know, slimness, but maybe also having the negative association of being called a skinny bitch, or, you know, having the negative impact with your family, or whatever that other association is.
Right.
So we end up kind of sitting in the middle,
mm-hmm.
And that's where people can get stuck. And they're like, no matter how hard I try, I can't get off this number, or, you know, I can't get past this point, I can't get down past this size, or whatever it is. That stuck point,
mm-hmm.
between
mm-hmm.
the two extremes of their pains and pleasures.
Yeah, I think they call it the plateau.
That plateau. Mm-hmm. That plateau. That's
mm-hmm.
right.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
okay.
Really, really fascinating.
Okay. So... how do you move past that point? Because I definitely wanted to get into emotional eating. I know we said we're going to discuss emotional eating, but how do we get past that point from being on that plateau, not just physically, but in our mind, since it's our mind that's keeping us there in the first place?
That's right. It so is. So how you get past it is, well, first of all, you have to start with a level of awareness. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the ladies and everyone on the call today is getting that level of awareness that maybe there is something going on beneath the surface. So it starts with that awareness and going, you know what, even though I consciously really want to do this, that there's something else going on. There's obviously something happening inside me, which means that I'm at odds with myself. I'm in conflict with myself in some level. And so then you start to get clear about, you know, what it is, where you are now and where you really want to head to. What's that, you know, what is that goal that you really want to achieve? And then you start to ask yourself, and kind of reflect on, or maybe journal out, what are the negative associations that you have with achieving that goal? What are the kind of what-if possibilities that could occur if you achieve that goal, which is your kind of wildest dreams, most amazing goal? And, you know, then you can start to uncover what your negative associations are, what your self-sabotaging associations and ideas are. And, you know, just like you said, yours might be, you know, that I don't want to feel like I'm 6 o'clock and all my family's curvy and voluptuous. You know, I don't
right.
want to feel on the outer of my
yeah,
my family.
Left
I want
out.
To feel connected. I want to feel connected to my family.
Mm-hmm.
So how to, you know, and with lots of other women, it can be one thing, or it can be, it's usually a kind of a bunch of different things. There's usually a whole load of different factors that come into play, but there'll be one or two that are really leveraged. The relationship one and weight is often a big one that I come across time and time again. And, you know, as well, you know, not to get too heavy, but with women and weight, there's also an issue around sex and around protection. And, you know, statistically, lots of women in every part of the world have experienced abuse or sexual trauma of some kind. And so a lot of times, weight has to do with protection around that. So just to kind of put it out there, that's often one of the self-sabotage or secondary gain factors. And so how to get past that, how to start to move past that limiting and secondary gain influence is to work through that emotional trauma, or to reassess and shift those self-limiting beliefs, like those negative beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just for instance, it might be, you know, it could be this belief that skinny women are bitches, or I'm unsafe if I'm slim, or, you know, that deep kind of sense of fear around being visible or being really noticed in the world, that has a huge, huge impact on your choices. And these are all unconscious beliefs, but they very much, they're kind of like the roots of the choices that we make. These unconscious beliefs, if you imagine like an iceberg, your conscious mind is just that very tip of the iceberg, and all of your unconscious mind is the iceberg beneath the water. And that's where all of your beliefs and memories and emotions, that's where they're all kind of stored. And so that's what creates those choices that you make on a day-to-day basis. So in order to stop the self-sabotaging and self-limiting kind of behavior, then you need to kind of dig down into that iceberg and start making shifts and releasing some of those patterns, shifting your mindset, shifting your emotions, and that will have a wonderful flow and effect all the way through your life in every area of your life. So yeah, it's really dealing with that mental and emotional side. That's how you make the change.
Right. Now, I know that dealing with that mental change can be different for different people. And for some people, it shifts with age anyway, because I know that, you know,
yes,
as the years go on, I really just don't care, you know,
about
anybody would think or, you know, anything like that. It's about me really being happy with myself. And when you are able to see, I know for me personally, I've watched a lot of people go through a lot of serious, serious health issues. And for me to be healthy and just a little overweight, I'm like, you know what? I'm way ahead of the game. And if I have just a little bit of a weight problem, I need to just make sure I pay attention and change, you know, actively and consciously change my eating habits and more walking, more exercising, and things like that, and not be so concerned when you watch somebody go through a serious sickness. So I do understand that sometimes, you know, your mental patterns and tendencies, your personality tendencies will change as you go through some experiences. Some other ways that people can get into changing the patterns of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's as you said, there's lots of different ways, and lots of these patterns do change over time, just kind of spontaneously. We're like, you know, as every time we go through a different experience, we're constantly renewing our beliefs, we're constantly shifting, and, you know, especially with things like an illness or a big life shift, like, you know, a big identity shift, like becoming a wife or becoming a mother, or, you know, getting a promotion at work. These all dramatically affect our sense of self-identity and the types of influences that affect us from our mind. But how, you know, if there's things that are really sticking, that are kind of continuing issues with you, then there are lots of different ways that you can look at shifting those. And, you know, some simple ones to start with are like journaling and meditation. They're two things that you can do for free, that you know, all you need to do is dedicate the time and the effort to actually do it, is just journaling out every day. There's this amazing exercise in the book called The Artist's Way, which is by Julia Cameron, which is quite a spiritual book, and it gives a lot of little exercises, little daily kind of exercises and things to help uncover your creativity and uncover your inner artist. And there's this fabulous exercise she recommends, which is called the Morning Pages, and you just freehand, so not typing, but freehand write three A4 pages of just whatever is in your head every morning when you get up. And you just empty out whatever thoughts are in your head. And so that might be, if you start out and you're like, I can't think of what to write. So you write, I can't think of what to write. Oh my God, this is so stupid. Why am I doing this? And you write it all out. All of that inner dialogue, all of that kind of inner chatter, just write it all out as you first wake up. And that's a really great exercise for clearing your head and to start to actually see and mirror back to yourself what you're saying to yourself in your own head. Because so often we don't realize how mean we are to ourselves in our own heads. Like, you know, saying things to ourselves in our own head that we would never, ever, ever dream of saying to another human being, let alone someone that we loved and cared for. So, you know, we can say some really nasty stuff. And so just becoming aware of that is often a catalyst for change. You go, wow, that was really nasty. Why am I talking to myself like that? And that can, you know, that can start a spontaneous type of change. And so that morning pages exercise is a great one to get started with. And meditation, you know, it's been around for thousands and thousands of years, and it really works. That's one that really does work, but you have to work it. You know, you have to actually practice it and do it day after day to teach yourself how to get into that state of calm. Mm. So there are two ways that you can start with. And they're, you know, they're free. It just takes the effort and the concentration to do it. Mm-hmm. And then there's more specific and tailored ways to help shift your limiting beliefs or emotions. And those are the kinds of things that I specialize in. And so I know in America that it's quite normal for people to go see a shrink. Mm-hmm. We don't even say shrink over here. We don't even use that word. It's so funny. But anyway, so it's kind of normal for someone to go see a psychologist or a coach over there, and I would, you know, if that's something that you want to do, then I would totally recommend doing that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, psychologists are amazing for making some shifts. And the amazing thing about a session with someone else, whether that be a psychologist or a counselor or a coach or a hypnotherapist, they can start to mirror back to you some of the things that you're doing and help you to hear yourself in a new way.
Mm-hmm,
And so those are all options. You know, my personal experience and my personal kind of expertise is with coaching and hypnotherapy, and I believe, personally, I believe that's the best way to facilitate change in kind of normal, non-clinically, without, you know, serious clinical problems. Coaching and hypnotherapy is really so effective to making change. And even in those clinical populations, it can be a massive help.
The first thing that you said was normal, which counts me out right away.
So, no way! Everybody's normal.
So as soon as you said normal.
Well,
as soon as you said normal, I'm like, okay.
Oh, well, that's not me. Bye-bye.
Right.
Okay, so maybe I mean, like, people that aren't, like, in a mental asylum. That's that's what I mean.
So, okay.
So, like, anyone who's, like, living, if you're living in, like, in day-to-day life, you're a tax-paying, law-abiding, regular citizen. You know, you're not some kind of
that
crazy sociopath or something.
Okay, that I am. That is me.
If you're a law-abiding, tax-paying, working citizen, then it would work for you.
Okay.
You know, it's
the second thing is, I'm not sure if anybody would even want to get inside my mind when it comes to hypnotists. I'm like, oh, really? You think you want to take a journey through what goes on in here, really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, yes. So what's your question?
No, I was just thinking that was hilarious to me as you were talking about it. And I'm like, okay, first she said normal, so that counts me out. And then just to think of hypnotizing, I'm like, I can't even imagine somebody getting inside my head. And, you know, they'll come out pretty confused themselves. So you may not want to take that journey unless you are very, very equipped. So, let's talk about that.
Getting inside.
The hypnotism, or what do you call it?
Yeah, hypnosis is amazing. It's amazing. I've been doing hypnosis with my clients for 10 years and been using it myself for that long, and it is incredible, because the cool thing is, you know, people have a lot of misconceptions about about hypnotherapy. But the really awesome thing is you go into trance, which is the kind of outcome point of hypnosis, is to go into trance, that state of relaxation, of calm, of focus. You know, people misunderstand hypnosis and think it's like, you know, the stuff that you see on magic shows or people
it's
dancing
true.
Like chickens.
I don't want to get to work and then somebody
eating.
Uses the keyword
yes.
and I start, you know, throwing
no.
stuff around or clucking like a
no,
chicken.
No. Exactly. It's not like that. It's not like that at all. That's stage hypnosis, and stage hypnosis is designed for entertainment. And
okay.
the interesting thing about people that end up on stage hypnosis shows is that they have been very carefully pre-selected in a series of tests that the stage hypnotist will do with the audience. They'll say, you know, everybody do this or everybody do that or, you know, come up on stage if you want to try this out. And so they'll do a series of tests to find out who is the most suggestible and who is the most extroverted of the people in the audience. And so they find those people, Cynthia, who would do those things if you just dared them to do it.
Right.
Or if they were a little bit drunk and you were like, hey, eat an onion. And they'd be like, yeah, whatever, okay.
Oh, wow.
And so then they're chomping into an onion because that's it, you know, their personality is kind of like that. So
right.
you can't ever be made, that's the truth of it. And you can't ever be made to do anything under hypnosis that you don't align with, outside of your morals or ethics. So hypnosis can only help you to access more of who you are already. You can't be made to do crazy things that you wouldn't, you know, that you wouldn't do otherwise. You know, like you couldn't make someone go and kill someone or do things like that. It's not like that. Thank goodness, absolutely. and clinical hypnosis is very different again to stage hypnosis. It's usually very gentle, and it's really about you teaching you how to come into a better relationship with yourself.
Mm.
So, yeah.
There's
this amazing hypnotherapist that was around in the 40s and 50s called Milton Erickson, and he's the kind of father of the modern style of hypnosis. And he said that clients of hypnotherapy are only ever clients because they're out of connection, they're out of touch with their own unconscious mind. So they're in conflict with themselves. And so hypnosis helps them to come back into congruence, to start to be friends with themselves again.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Let me stop you there right quick. Let me stop you and just say, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Kylie Ryan from My Mind Coach, all the way from Australia. Believe it or not, we are already halfway through the show, and we're having such a good time that we don't even realize the hour is almost over. Can you believe it?
Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
So if you're just tuning in, you are listening with Kylie Ryan and me, Cynthia Williamson from Bridal Tribe. We are discussing how our mind affects our choices and our health. We've had a brief discussion about stopping self-sabotage. We're talking now about hypnotherapy, and we're going to go deeper into it as we continue the show.
Yeah.
If you at this time have any questions or comments for Kylie or myself, feel free to call in at 347-996-3160. Be sure to press the number 1 if you have that question or comment. Otherwise, all of you that are on the line, go ahead and just stay on the line and listen anyway. For those of you listening on the internet, feel free to call in if you choose to, or just drop a question into the event that we've posted up on Facebook, and I'm happy to let Kylie know if you have any questions. So let's get back into it.
That was really good.
Thank you.
very, very good.
Thank you.
Let me see. Where was I? If I unhit pause.
You were basically finishing up about, you know, that hypnotherapy is really about getting friendly with yourself again, becoming friends with yourself so that you can start to make the changes that you need in order to have better health.
That's right. Because really better health and all, that was a great summary too, better health and all of those positive changes that you want to make in your life, whether that be better saving, better health, better well-being, it all starts from a place of loving and wanting to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so all of the work that I do with my clients in coaching or in hypnotherapy is to help them to come back into a sense of love for themselves, of, you know, befriending themselves, of, you know, awe of their amazing human body and starting to come from a place of wanting to take care of themselves, of wanting to nourish themselves. And if you start with that basis and you can start to kind of remove those obstacles or blocks that we talked about earlier, those kind of self-limiting beliefs, when you come mm-hmm. from that place of self-love, then the choices that you make are naturally going to be healthier choices. They're naturally going to be choices that are that have a long-term positive impact rather than just a short-term instant gratification hit, you know. So things like heaps, like a whole block of chocolate or, you know, too much wine or too much ice cream, as, you know, keeps coming up. If those kinds of things have a short-term positive hit, they're like, yes, that feels good, that tastes so good, oh my God, it's so great, but it has a long-term detrimental impact. It has a long-term detrimental impact to your, you know, to your insulin levels, to your hormone receptors, to your body weight, to your energy levels, to, you know, to your self-esteem. All of those kind of long-term negative impacts happen if you're kind of consistently making those kind of instant gratification choices. So some of the things that one of the quick questions that I give people to ask before they want to eat something, if they're like going, oh, is this the best choice for me now? Ask yourself, is this a self-loving choice? Does this come from a place of love? And is this moving me towards where I want to go? Does this choice, does this food, does this, you know, does this choice that I'm going to make right now move me towards where I want to go? And then it's quite simple to know yes or no if that moves you towards or if not. And is this a choice of self-love or, you know, or self-loathing or kind of escapism or procrastination? And it brings you back to that mindfulness, that presence about the choice that you're making in the moment rather than after the fact when you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that, or why did I do that? If you can ask yourself, is this a self-loving choice before you make those big decisions and even those little decisions, then you'll start to make better decisions.
That's really great, because it really sounds like you're saying that anything that we do in excess, we have an excessive reaction to ourselves, an excessive negative reaction, and we talk very negative to ourselves. But if we continuously move toward balance and making self-loving choices, that our speech to ourselves will also be balanced and self-loving.
Yes, 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 yes. It totally is. It totally is. And, you know, this is not about, you know, it's health months, health talks. And so it's not about being super skinny. It's not about being, you know, having the best body on the street or the best body on Facebook or, you know, being, you know, the skinniest or the prettiest. It's about being the best
healthy
you can be. It's about being the healthy, that healthy you. And that comes from health on the inside and the outside. So physically healthy and, you know, mentally healthy and emotionally healthy. And, and I am like, I'm the biggest, you know, I am the biggest chocolate lover out there. So don't for a second think that I'm not eating chocolate. I am absolutely eating chocolate. And I think that, you know, in moderation, that keeps me healthy, because I, you know, it's those little choices in moderation. I love that. And it makes me so happy to then have a bit of chocolate and know that I can, you know, that I'm really happy to eat those other choices, those beautiful salads and vegetables and, you know, lean meats and nuts and stuff through the rest of the day, because that all is a part of that kind of beautiful, healthy choices that, you know, that are a part of life. So, you know, you don't want to ever give up, you know, birthday cake or things like that. But
I know,
if someone's having a birthday, Yeah, I know. I don't either. But if someone's having a birthday every single day, you're having birthday cake. Well, then, you know, you've got to have a think about that.
Yeah, we might have to start by
do I need cake. Birthday? Yeah. Do I need cake every day? Maybe not. Maybe we need to look at some other options. So. But yeah, it's really about making those choices out of love. And when you do, when you come from that place of starting to love yourself, starting to nourish yourself, starting to look after yourself, then your self-talk becomes so much kinder and you become a much nicer person to be around because you start with self-compassion. And when you can be compassionate with yourself, then you can be much more compassionate with others as well. And that's a real key to healthy relationships in every aspect of our lives is
it really
being compassionate
is.
And kind of thoughtful. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen a change in some individuals who go to being a more pleasant person after they've made certain changes in their life. And, of course, we think that either it's like a calm before the storm or something's just wrong with them when they start acting nice.
Yeah.
But they really have kind of come to a place where they're feeling more love and happiness with themselves. And because they have compassion for themselves, they do show compassion to someone else. And they are more pleasant to be around.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking about like withdrawal effects because I know individuals who have given up coffee and I do not like being around them when they're giving up coffee. and
they need to have more oranges.
Oh my goodness! I want to just shove some coffee at them and say, "Please drink this."
Yeah.
Because you
please
know,
please drink this. You'll be much nicer.
Yes. We're going to hurt you. We're going to take you in the back and show you a few things if you don't drink this coffee.
That's so funny. Vitamin C helps with people for coffee withdrawals, just as a quick tip. So have lots of oranges. If you're giving up coffee, have lots of oranges instead. That will help.
Thank you for that quick tip. But, now I'm going to supply our office with lots of oranges when people start giving up coffee because I refuse to take the abuse.
Absolutely. And that's a big thing to be, that's a whole issue in itself. That's, because you're shifting your habit and there's that withdrawal factor and the toxins start coming out and, then your adrenals have to start working differently and, start doing that pickup where you're not getting that kind of coffee instant boost. But that's a part of that kind of roller coaster of you get the coffee hit and then you're high for, maybe an hour or two and then you get that slump afterwards and then you might go for a sugar hit. Maybe it's a cookie or a Mars bar or something and that gives you that sugar hit to pick yourself back up. But that's a really roller coaster ride and that stops you from having that kind of even keel temperament where, you're able to easily weather life. Storms and life's challenges and when you have that kind of sense of peace and just like I said that self-loving that self-compassionate core on the inside you're so much less judgmental you're so much less snappy you're so much more pleasant to be around and you make more loving choices to yourself and to others and you can start to then you can start to allow your kind of natural gifts and creativity to really shine because you're not coming from a place of lack. You're coming from a place of abundance of like, this life's pretty good. Let's see what fun we can have.
Wow.
That really shifts everything.
I like that you said that, that you stop kind of living in a place of lack and living in a place of abundance and you open up your creativity. I think that's a wonderful point that our listeners need to hear. That I needed to hear. Not that, we always kind of know it, but it's always good to kind of hear it again and get reminded.
Absolutely.
That we can really live deeply inside of our creativity and be compassionate to ourselves and show ourselves more love. So thank you for saying that. That is an excellent point for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, even after all of that, did we even really touch on the emotional eating part?
Sort of. We've been kind of talking about ice cream throughout. So
yeah.
So ice cream is kind of the...
the emotional eating.
We kind of touched on it. So emotional eating is just a symptom of that. Is a symptom of that feeling lack. Is a symptom of that feeling lack of feeling not enough. Maybe it's boredom. Maybe it's stress. And so the emotional eating is a compensation mechanism. It's a survival kind of mechanism. So that's a kind of quick summary. That's the quick hit. Emotional eating is the quick hit that helps you get through. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you can make the choices out of love, then that will shift that emotional eating. That will start to shift that emotional eating as well.
Well, you know what, then I have a question because I have a friend of mine who I've been, you know, I interact with her family and everything. And I think that her daughter, one of her daughters, and I think the child must be at least maybe 11 or maybe 12.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that she has an emotional eating disorder.
Yeah.
I mean, just from watching her and seeing certain things, because I'm watching as she actually hides food. She doesn't want anybody to know that she ate it. And it's like, you know, when she comes to my house, I say, you know, you can ask me for whatever it is that you are hungry for. And
that you
know,
want.
And you can eat it out in the open. There's nothing that you need to hide, you know, here in my house.
Yeah.
And even after you can say stuff like that, sometimes after they leave, I still find things hidden under the bed or behind. I'm like, oh, wow, you know. So it's a concern for me that at an early age,
for sure.
Emotional eating and the mind is already affected. What would you do?
Oh, yeah.
How do you, when you're dealing with the parent, hopefully when the parent begins to change the way that they're dealing with their healthy lifestyle, they can kind of show the child. But if the child has this issue, what are some of the things that you would be able to say to them or talk to them about? How do you get them to really begin to change their habits?
Oh, that's such a great question and so important to start to help these young people, these little young, you know, so many times with young girls and young boys that they start having, I was reading some studies saying that girls start to have body image concerns and wish they were thinner from like as young as 5.
Wow.
It is scary. It is really scary what is happening in today's kind of modern age, because we're living in this kind of age of instant comparison with social media. And, you know, all of this kind of, you know, everybody knows that there's a problem with obesity in the world. There's a problem with health. It's, you know, you kind of can't ignore it. It's pretty obvious.
It is.
You know, millions of people around the world are struggling with it. But that's not the only problem. There's also this converse problem of anorexia, body image disorders, and this kind of emotional eating or secret eating that happens in relation to that.
Yes.
They're kind of flip sides, Cynthia, of the same coin. It's, you know, obesity is at one end of the scale, and then there's this kind of trying to be controlled about your eating, which kind of ends up in, you know, at the extreme end of the scale. I'm certainly not saying that this girl is in this category, but, you know, at the extreme end of that opposite to obesity is the anorexia and the bulimia. That both of those different kind of sides of disordered eating, whether you're eating too much or whether you're trying to control and ignore your hunger and eat too little, they come from that same place of being disconnected with your body's true needs and not loving yourself enough to honor what you truly need.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
That is a really good one, being disconnected from what your body truly needs and not honoring. Did you say that
not
again?
Not honoring. These two extremes, whether it's anorexia, bulimia, or, you know, secret eating or emotional eating, is kind of a bit further back to the middle on that scale, or obesity. Anyone who's struggling with their weight on either end of the extreme, or body image, it's a disconnection from your body and what your body's, the signals that your body is giving you, and not honoring what your body truly needs, and honoring what you need to be truly happy and thriving, not loving yourself enough to honor yourself and your needs.
Now, you saying that makes me wonder, because to me, I think that everything that we're talking about this month for health literacy, is something that really should be taught and taught by speaking as well as living it. You know, when I was growing up in our household, everything on our plate was, you know, a piece of meat, some rice, some vegetables, a salad, some milk or some water. So, I mean, we were taught our
real
eating habits. Right, in their home, and then even after we left the home, it's what we were used to, you know, so that's how we eat.
But
I also believe even, you know, some people, because people learn different ways, because some people learn by that kind of habit is one thing, but I think it's something that we should really be actively teaching our children about honoring our bodies. The way that you phrase it is perfect.
Oh, yeah.
About honoring our bodies and giving our bodies what it is that we need. And sometimes they don't know what it is that we need.
That's right.
We live in such a busy, busy society. And with within the education system, they're piling more and more homework on the kids. And, they're studying, they're sleeping, they're eating. They're also trying to live, a nice life. So it's like you don't necessarily have time to really say, look, we're going to take every Saturday or every Sunday to talk about how it is you honor yourself with food or how it is you honor yourself with sleep and, you know, to really have those kind of open conversations. So you just saying what you said, it was a real connection to that. And I think that we as a society should probably come together more to figure out how to continuously do that within a whole community.
Oh, I so agree. And, you know, there is so, you know, I'm a mum, and so I've only got one little girl, one 18 month old baby, but you know, I so feel for women out there who have lots of kids, who are working full time, who, you know, who might be a single parent, who are struggling maybe financially. And, you know, I know it's tough. It's all very well to say, you know, you've got to spend heaps of time with your kids and teach them and, you know, put whole foods on the table each night. I know it's not easy for some people out there who are struggling with, with their weight, with their own, you know, financial issues, with their own stress. And I think it really is a matter and an issue for the community to come together and support each other in these kinds of forums to talk about that, just like you say, to talk about, you know, what is it? How do we listen to our bodies? Because your body really does know, but there's so much noise and so much, so much filtering of stuff that kind of gets put on top of us that we forget, and we've forgotten how to decode and how to listen to our own intuition, to listen to our own body's wisdom. And it really takes stripping back all of that noise, stripping back the noise of social media, stripping back the noise of, you know, even the news on television, stripping back the talk shows, stripping back the schoolwork and the this and that, you know, that those kind of pressures, to just come together and be in each other's presence, to really be present. And one of my kind of latest crusades is to kind of share this message that being on your phone and being on social media constantly is not good for you. It's another aspect of this body disconnection. And you know, playing heaps of video games or spending a lot of time on, you know, people in Australia, I don't know about in America, I think it's probably the same, but people walk around like they're bumping into things because they're looking at their smartphones all the time, mm-hmm. And so, you know, just giving that you know, creating those kind of spaces like they used to be in communities, these sacred spaces and, you know, family time and this kind of community spirit where people get together in person and connect with each other and talk about these kind of important issues. I mean, I guess the new way of doing that is something like this that you're doing right now, is, you know, bringing together people to talk about the important issues. And that's why stuff like your show is so important, to talk about these important issues and get it out there to people who are time poor and, you know, who don't have necessarily access to this kind of information otherwise. But connecting with your family, connecting with your friends, your local community, however it is that you can get some connection and start to talk to your kids about it, I think it's so, so important.
I agree.
You know, for this young girl that you mentioned before, I'd try and talk to her and find out what's going on in her life, because emotional eating comes from stress. Emotional eating comes from emotions, and emotional eating is a survival mechanism to help us deal with unspoken or unhonored emotions inside. And the interesting thing is when you it's an escape mechanism from dealing with those emotions. You know, like, I'm sad, so I'll eat some chocolate and then I'll distract myself. And
right.
That's not even necessarily a conscious thought. You don't go, oh, I'm sad, I better go eat some ice cream. It's like, oh, I feel like some ice cream, or I'm procrastinating from doing this important project, so I better go make myself a cup of tea and get a cookie. So it's like you don't even realize you're doing it until you've kind of got your hand in the cookie jar. But the kind of key way to shifting that is to getting to start talking about our emotions and talking about how we're really feeling and honoring how we're feeling and not making it shameful to feel however we feel, whether
yes.
that's embarrassed or whether we feel angry or whether we feel frustrated or, you know, whether this young girl feels stressed out at school or whether she feels like she wants to spend more time with her mom or with her dad or with her brothers and sisters or,
mm-hmm.
you know, or whether, you know, she's just not happy at school. I don't know. But finding out how she's feeling
mm-hmm.
and trying to connect with her on that kind of level. And, you know, with young kids, they're not always going to be so, not going to be so forthcoming straight
mm-hmm.
away.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep at it and go, look, I'm here for you, it's okay. And you've got to, you know, model that success as the parent or as the adult around to kind of
mm-hmm.
go, you know, I was feeling a bit, to help them give words to their emotions. You know, I was feeling a bit angry today, and so I went and took a walk, and that really helped me to clear my head.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of start to give them some options to deal with those emotions. So, well, you know, I was feeling a bit sad today, so I had I watched a sad movie and I just let those tears fall, because that's, you know, it's okay to be sad sometimes, and it's okay to talk to people when you're sad. It's okay to ask for help. And, you know, just giving those examples, I find, can be quite useful where you don't necessarily... They're not necessarily going to be so forthcoming, but they will take on and they will learn from what you say and what you do.
Right.
So if you can be a good example of that, be a good example of dealing with your emotions in other ways other than eating, that's a great start. And then, you know, actually talking about it and going, hey, you know, what's going on? I noticed that there were some, you know, some wrappers in the cupboard and, you know, what's up with that? Like, when did you have that? Or what's going on? And
mm-hmm.
kind of trying to get a bit of information and kind of saying, you know, it's okay to talk to me when you want to, I'm here for you. That
mm-hmm.
kind of support. So yeah, that's one way to kind of deal with it in these kinds of instances. But I guess, you know, taking kids to, it's difficult with kids because you so want to help them, and sometimes the way that you help them can end up making the problem worse by taking them to get all this, you know, kind of outside help, when it really starts with your connection with that child, and whether you be
right.
the parent or, you know, you're an uncle or auntie or a concerned friend.
Mm-hmm.
It's your heart-to-heart connection with that child that they're going to open up to you, and they're going to learn from you
mm-hmm.
being authentic with yourself, so that they can learn to be authentic with themselves as well.
This was an excellent conversation. If you can, well, like I said, if you can believe it, the hour. We actually are over the hour.
Oh, like, are we over the hour? Oh, my God.
We are over
chatting.
The hour. Yes.
Talking
yes,
about important stuff here, Cynthia.
It's true. Every week when I come on, I always say, you know, welcome to an hour of tribal wisdom. But, you know, as usual, we're probably going to go over the hour because we get so
yeah.
deep into the conversation. But I want that you and I continue this conversation. I know we talked about going on Spreecast and doing this as a video, and I can't wait to do that because
yes.
this is such an important topic. And I think people just want to see you, you know, so.
Yeah. So,
let me just say thank you so much for coming on the show, Kylie. I can't wait to have you on another show with me.
It's
again interviewing. And don't go too far, because I'm gonna Skype you after we hang up from this call, so we can like chat just a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
But
okay.
But I'm not gonna
go anywhere.
Well, to our tribers, to our listeners, thank you so much once again for all your support and your encouragement for our shows and for listening in to Health Literacy Month here on Tribal Wisdom. You know that Bridal Tribe is a company about love, beauty, wedding, and marriage fun. And we love you so much, so we love to bring you all the information that we can. So be sure to tune in next week as we speak with Juan Hager. She is a vegan who went from being a carnivore, I call it carnivore because that's what I call myself, carnivore, into the vegan lifestyle. So she talks about the transitions, if that's something that you would like to do, if you would like to transition your lifestyle into a more vegan or plant-based lifestyle. Juan Hager will be with us next week to have that conversation. Again, we love you. We thank you so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon. Good night.